Well, good afternoon. It's a little after 2:30, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to CSIS. My name is Catherine Bliss, and I direct the project on global water policy here. And it's a pleasure to see a good crowd out here this afternoon to talk about sanitation, specifically the costs of inadequate sanitation in India, with representatives of the Water and Sanitation Program. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Water and Sanitation Program, or WSP, it's a public-private multi-donor partnership started in 1978 and administered by the World Bank. And donors include governments and private organizations. And WSP has offices in Africa, East Asia, Latin America and the Caribbean, South Asia, and, of course, here in Washington, D.C. Now, in December of 2010, WSP released a report called The Economic Impacts of Inadequate Sanitation in India. And you have some synopses and information about this report at your places and on the chairs as well. The analysis, which was based on official and survey figures from 2006, determined that inadequate sanitation costs in India, or inadequate sanitation costs India at least $53.8 billion. Primarily because of health costs, domestic impacts, opportunity costs, and losses in the tourism sector. And so this was, you know, according to the report, roughly the equivalent of 6.4% of India's GDP that year, so in 2006. So we're very fortunate to have with us today several of the report authors and investigators to share their insights regarding the research, the methodology, and how WSP intends to use the report to generate support for sanitation programs. And we'll also hear a bit about future plans for the Economics of Sanitation Initiative, which WSP is managing and which this falls into. So it's my pleasure to introduce our four speakers today. We have Jay So to my right, the manager of the Water and Sanitation Program based here in Washington, D.C. We have Vandana Bhatnagar, Water and Sanitation Specialist and one of the authors of the report based at the WSP offices in India. We have Vivek Raman to my far left, also Water and Sanitation Specialist at the WSP office in India. And Mr. Joan Costain, Regional Team Leader for WSP for the South Asia region. And so following the panel comments, we will open the conversation for questions and answers and discussion. But let me turn first to Jay So to provide some kind of overview and introductory remarks about WSP.
Thank you, Catherine. It's really an honor and a pleasure for us to be here this afternoon at CSIS. The Water and Sanitation Program has a unique aspect in that we are really a largely a field-based program. So our knowledge that we share is not only for the use of the countries, but also to contribute to the sector when possible. So when Catherine suggested that we come and give us a short briefing on this work on economics of sanitation, I jumped at the chance of having our colleagues from South Asia actually here to discuss the topic with you. The Economics of Sanitation Initiative is part of an advocacy series that WSP started about 5 years ago. Because of the 24 countries where the Water and Sanitation Program is located, a number of these countries are middle-income countries. And in fact, we started to realize that it was not for lack of financial resources that these countries had some of the lowest access rates on sanitation. There had to be some other reason that this was not catching the eye of the governments. So the first series was done in 5 countries in East Asia: Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. And looking at the economic cost of inadequate sanitation in these 5 countries turned out to be about $7 billion for the 5 countries combined annually. And in a country like Cambodia, that was almost 7% of its annual GDP. And that turned out to be a very powerful communication for the governments that were involved. And with this type of an impact, we wanted to start looking at other countries where WSP is working, where the access rates, we would hope, could be accelerated. And the study that we're about to share with you is the second in the series that we've done outside of East Asia, and that's the Economics for Sanitation of India. So we look forward to your comments after the presentation.
Thank you, Jay. And thank you, CSIS, for giving us this wonderful opportunity to share our study with all of you today. Through this presentation, what we'd like to do is firstly give you a very brief context of the status of sanitation in India, and then take you through some of the details of what our findings reveal, and finally leave you with some key takeaways that we see emerging from this analysis. It doesn't really come as much of a surprise if we say that when we say that the status of sanitation in India is fairly grim. There's a huge challenge that we face in the area of sanitation. In the last decade, there has been rapid progress that has been made in improving the status of access to sanitation in many parts of the country, but the gap that remains still is enormous. Effectively, more than 600 million people do not have access to improved sanitation in the country, which is roughly more than twice the population of the United States. In the rural context, the government has, over the last several decades, undertaken several large public expenditure programs, which were targeted at building millions of toilets across the country. But these missed a very critical aspect of behavior change, and hence did not deliver the necessary outcomes. On the urban side, too, there is a fairly large story that remains unaddressed. Sometimes we see India as a predominantly rural country, but the urban population of India is larger than that of the entire population of this country. The cities in India have huge challenges on account of rapid urbanization and unplanned development, and hence have a large sanitation challenge to be addressed. So the net result is that we face huge health, environmental, and social impacts on account of the gaps in sanitation. Several studies in the past have attempted to assess these impacts, but we feel this is possibly the first assessment of the economic losses that are emerging on account of inadequate sanitation. As Jay mentioned, really the primary objective of this study is one of advocacy. We want to advocate for increased and sustained investments, but equally important is the area of efficient planning and implementation of sustainable interventions. So through this study, what we are seeking to do is generate a strong political and administrative commitment to undertake these interventions which are aimed at behavior change, at addressing smart technology options, at transforming the institutions that are responsible for service delivery. The study has really been undertaken in two parts. The first part, which is what we are sharing here with you, is the impact study, and that is really aimed at analyzing the economic impacts and the costs on account of inadequate sanitation. This is based on secondary data. The second part, which is currently underway, is the option study. That's really looking at the costs and benefits associated with different sanitation options. And that is going to be based on primary surveys, which are currently going on. The definition we have used for the purpose of this study is really a little different from the commonly understood one. The commonly understood one really is talking about liquid and solid waste management. What we are looking at is the mechanisms needed to prevent human contact with human excreta and hygiene practices associated with that. In terms of the methodology that has been used, the first step was to look at the entire body of impacts, and this has been categorized into four broad categories. As Catherine mentioned, we are looking at the categories of health-related impacts, access to domestic water, access to toilets, and tourism-linked losses. The assessment was done through a three-stage process. At the first stage, we have looked at various data sources for the incidence of these impacts. And for that, we have looked at all various national data sources as well as the WHO data source. And from that, using scientific literature on attribution, we have culled out an estimation of the impacts that could be attributed to poor sanitation. And finally, we have assigned an economic value to this share of impacts, which could be correlated purely to sanitation. To take you through just one example, that of health, we have first looked at the potential diseases that could be caused on account of poor sanitation, and this included diarrhea, measles, malaria, acute lower respiratory infections, and several others. And we have used data sources such as the WHO database, the National Family Health Surveys, the census data. And from that, using scientific literature, we have extracted the incidents that could be correlated purely to poor sanitation and hygiene practices, and thereafter assigned economic values using various valuation techniques. There are several other welfare impacts which could be identified to poor sanitation, but these we have not valued on account of the absence of requisite data. And the estimation year that we have used is 2006, because the data after that is uneven across these various impact categories. In the following slides, I'd like to take you through the details of our findings. As Catherine mentioned, the overall impact that we have assessed on account of inadequate sanitation is huge. $53.8 billion. That is equivalent to about 6.4% of India's GDP as of 2006. The real chunk of this is on account of health-related impacts. And the second category of impacts that is most significant is the productive time lost on account of poor access to toilets. In the subsequent slides, I'd like to take you through each of these categories and give you some details. The first and the largest share of impacts is on account of health. $38.5 billion is what our estimate is on account of health-related impacts. And the largest among this, within this, is on account of premature mortality. 1 in 10 deaths in India is attributable to causes linked to poor sanitation. Within that, diarrhea is a big factor. Diarrhea by itself accounts for 1 in every 20 deaths in India. And children carry a huge burden within the health impacts. Half of the impacts on health, on account of health, are attributable to diarrhea in children. The second category of impacts within health is on account of productive time lost in illness. Illness not just with the patient, of the patient, but also the caretaker. And this we estimate to be 12% of total health impacts, which is the same as the share that we've estimated for healthcare-related costs. The second largest category of impacts is with respect to poor access to toilets. Approximately 750 million Indians take recourse to open defecation or depend on shared toilets. Accessing defecation sites or shared toilets requires extra time, which is loss of productive time. We have estimated what is the cost of this productive time lost. That is close to $10.5 billion. In addition, we have also looked at the productive time lost due to girls being absent from schools, working women being absent from their workplaces on account of lack of proper toilet facilities. That, too, has been a significant contributor. In fact, the estimates we have done are very much on the conservative side. Only 25% of households in India have access to piped water. The rest depend on borewells, on public taps, various natural sources of water, which are often unprotected and with questionable water quality. One of the factors that contributes to poor water quality is poor sanitation. So people are therefore forced to treat water, are required to access water from a distance, or even purchase water. And the costs on that account is estimated to be $4.2 billion. As you can see, some of these are showing the untreated sewage going into open water bodies, which often are the source of water for people. Tourism-linked losses can be significant on account of poor sanitation. A tourist visiting a country experiencing poor sanitation might not visit it again or might dissuade another tourist from visiting it. We used surveys of tourist perceptions of toilets, of their stay, their spending patterns, to estimate the loss of tourism earnings on account of poor sanitation. We also estimated the losses on account of gastrointestinal illnesses in international tourists. And the total of that we have estimated is to be equivalent to $60 million. Now, there is a huge story of inequity also that underlies this entire analysis. We have undertaken a differential impact analysis across different income segments, across rural and urban India. And what is revealing is that it's the poor which carry the maximum impacts on account of poor sanitation. If you look at in per capita terms, the poorest 20% in the urban areas are the ones who carry the largest burden. Their burden is double that of the richest 20% in urban areas. Even in the rural areas, the poorest 20% carry a burden that's 1.5 times that of the richest 20% in the rural areas. If we look at it in cumulative terms, it is again the rural poor, the poorest 20%, which carry the largest losses, and that is $4.5 billion. Jay mentioned the other ESI studies that have been undertaken in Southeast Asia, so we did a comparison with their findings, and once again, the impact that we've seen in India is significantly on the higher side, 6.4% of India's GDP, compared to, say, Indonesia's number, which is 3.8% of their GDP. In per capita terms, our estimate shows $48 is the cost that the individual citizen carries, as against Southeast Asia, which has less than half the number of $22 per capita. Now, there's a flip side to this story. There are potential gains that can be reaped through sustainable interventions to improve sanitation. These could include improved access to toilets, improved access to water, hygiene practices. Our estimate is that investment in such interventions could yield a gain of about $32 billion, which is roughly equivalent to 3.9% of GDP. In addition, there's a huge economic opportunity that is waiting to be tapped in the form of the market for sanitation goods and services. As per our estimation, this market is as large as $152 billion over a period extending to 2020. And to give you a sense of perspective, if we annualize that number, it comes to about $12 billion per annum, which is roughly the size of India's IT outsourcing market. Now, the context we have in India today is actually a favorable one to undertake some of these interventions. The government of India has recognized to quite an extent the importance of sanitation and has large programs currently underway in the rural and urban areas. In the rural context, we have the Total Sanitation Campaign, which really is a community-led demand-responsive campaign to address sanitation in rural areas. In the urban context, we have a national urban sanitation policy, which was brought out in 2008, which really sets out an agenda for cities to address their sanitation challenges. Two specific initiatives that have been taken in the last 2 years, the city sanitation ratings and city sanitation plans, which are covering over 140 cities, are aiming to help cities prioritize action on sanitation and help them invest resources in sanitation more efficiently. So what are our key messages that emerge from this study? The first is that inadequate sanitation has huge economic implications for India. This is very, very significant for a country that has huge growth aspirations. The largest impact is one of health, with 1 in 10 deaths that can be linked to inadequate sanitation. children carry a huge share of this burden. Diarrhea in children accounts for 1/3 of total impacts. The poor carry a very, very disproportionate burden in this total costing. Urban poor, on a per capita basis, suffer the most. On a cumulative basis, it's the rural poor that carry the highest losses. But there is a significant opportunity here in terms of the potential gains that could be reaped through sanitation interventions and the huge market that can be developed around this sector. So what we see is that there is a need for increased and sustained and efficient resource allocations, and also a very, very strong focus on a monitoring framework that actually tracks the changes in these impacts. Thank you. My colleague Vivek and our team had worked very closely on this study, so we'd be happy to take questions after Juan has provided his update.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And as Vandana mentioned, we'd be happy to take some questions. But just before that, we thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the initiatives which are currently underway in India. And I think Vandana has alluded to some of those. And in the preparation of the study, we had a great deal of assistance from the government of India, from the Ministry of Health, but particularly the two ministries that we've been working most closely with have been the Ministry of Urban Development and the Ministry of Rural Development. And it's with these ministries that we are supporting their programs which are addressing this significant challenge of inadequate sanitation in India. And as Vandana alluded to, that with the Ministry of Urban Development, the Water and Sanitation Program at the World Bank has been working with the ministry to develop a city sanitation rating. So we, with the government, rated 423 cities in India, putting them into four categories, which you can basically kind of say as being good, okay, poor, and very poor. And of the 423 cities that were rated, I think only four of them came into the second category. So the category of having good sanitation was empty. And the second category of having adequate, we had four cities in there. And the other 419 cities were kind of crammed into the bottom two of being poor or very bad. And so the government is very anxious to address this. And to follow up from the rating program, we're also now working with the government on a series of city sanitation plans, which Vandana also alluded to. So with the government, we're doing plans for 120 cities of various sizes across India to help the local governments. And while we're working with the national government, with the union government in India, the topic of sanitation and water is essentially a state-level topic. So with the union government, we're working with the states and the municipalities to help them develop programs which will be able to address this poor standard of sanitation. And now the government as well is putting significant amounts of funding into this, and there's a very big program, what's called the JNNURM, which is the Jawaharlal Nehru National Urban Renewal Mission, and that in total that's going to be something like a $40 billion program for urban renewal in India. So the Ministry of Urban Development putting a lot of money into this. The World Bank also is supporting this, and the World Bank is now preparing a $1 billion project to help cities in terms of addressing issues of water and sanitation. So there's a lot of money going into that. Though I guess one of the points that we would most emphasize as well is that the issue of poor sanitation in India is not essentially an issue of inadequate resources. It's much more an issue of behaviors. And so we're working very closely as well with the government to address those issues. And in fact, even the scale of the problem, even the financial challenge of poor sanitation is probably something that is within the reach of the government of India. It is obviously something that's going to cost tens of billions of dollars to address, but it is something that is probably affordable. And as Vandana has mentioned, the cost of poor sanitation at the current time is being borne largely by the rural population. And as Vandana mentioned, even just the poorest quintile of the rural population is bearing the single largest share of the cost. And that was like $4.5 billion just for that quintile. And so we're also working very closely with the Ministry of Rural Development in their total sanitation campaign. And this is a campaign to bring basic but adequate toilets to the entire population. There are something like 260,000 panchayats, which are large villages, and a village in India can be as much as large as 10,000 people. So where I come from, we call that a town, but in India that can still qualify as a village. And so the total sanitation campaign is, again, the union government in India working with the state-level governments to try to bring, as I say, simple but basic and adequate toilets to the entire population. And I think the government is hoping to do that. We've just launched with them, in fact, both for water and sanitation. The Water and Sanitation Program at the World Bank has just helped the government in the preparation of a new national sanitation or rural sanitation strategy, and also one for water, which reaches out to 2022. Now, if for water, India will achieve the Millennium Development Goals by 2015. For sanitation, India will not. And so I think we're looking much more to the tail end of that strategy before we'll get to achieve more or less total sanitation in India. But anyway, I think at this point, if it's okay, we'd like to hand it over in case there are any questions or clarifications that might be required.
And Vandana, thank you very much for both providing an overview and how the study was both developed and carried out, and also where things have gone since the study and where things will be likely to move in the future. I wanted to start out with a question for the panelists. It sounds like a lot of this work has, been carried out in cooperation with the national government and using national level figures, but that, the issues are really in many ways managed at the municipal level and at the village level. And I just, wanted to ask about the ways in which issues of sanitation are felt politically at the village level. If these have, if this has been an issue in either elections or in debates and discussion, and, do you see this issue, really coming out in debates at all, or is it it's something that, is really felt, much more as either a private issue or more of an economic issue?
Okay. Well, maybe I'll speak in general terms, and then maybe my colleagues might like to add something in terms of more detail. We definitely see the issue of water and sanitation in India as being an apolitical issue that we work in. There are 30 states in India. We work across those states, and there are different political parties in power across the states. And in fact, the alliance that is in government at the current time also works equally with all states, irrespective of the political affiliation. One of the things that we are finding, however, is that water and sanitation are seen as being key basic services. And in fact, we're just working together with the government of Bihar, and again supported by the union government, to launch a combined program where we're going to be bringing together aspects of water and sanitation together with governance. And so this program is called the Panchayati Raj Institution Strengthening Project in Bihar. And there the important thing is to try to build and establish the credibility of the government through showing to the people that the government does in fact have the ability to deliver services. So some people might know that Bihar is often perceived to be, let's just say, amongst the most challenged of Indian states, where there's a strong history of clientelism and nepotism. And so what the government is doing is they are working with us to deliver this program of delivery of safe drinking water and also safe sanitation as a mechanism to show that votes gain services, and that if you vote for the government will actually be able to deliver you something. So in this case, water and sanitation are not only an end in themselves, as they are for us in our group, but also a means to an end for good governance.
Just to add to that, and it's true that it is predominantly an apolitical issue and probably seen within the basket of basic services, and hence does not really get picked up as a single point political agenda. But just to give another angle to this, the initiative that we mentioned about the city sanitation ratings, which really was an assessment across cities in the country, 430 cities, actually generated a lot of interest amongst even the political representatives, because there were fairly awkward questions about why my city is less than that city, and hence generated a fair amount of discussion within the levels of government at the state and the national level as to why their city wasn't doing better. So in that sense, that kind of a pressure mechanism did get activated on the sanitation side and in the urban side. I don't know if you want to add.
If you want, I can give you a very interesting anecdote to which what Vandana mentioned. Srinagar, which is in the northern part of India, it is considered the Switzerland of India, was rated in the bottom three. So hence the chief minister, who is leading the state, had to come out and address to the public because of outcry as to why that city was rated there. So this kind of advocacy has really led to people asking for improved sanitation services, and that was the idea behind ESI as well. So...
Thank you. Let me just pose one other question here, taking the chair's prerogative. You mentioned both quite a bit about the opportunity costs, the time spent either accessing sanitation and also the health costs, which, you know, in many cases both fall disproportionately on girls and women in terms of tending to relatives and that kind of thing. And I wanted to ask about, you know, the extent to which perhaps ministries of education and agencies that are focused on women's affairs or women's issues are also kind of peeking up this issue and focusing on that.
The Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Social Justice and Welfare are both waking up to this issue and have also got some initiatives on ground which are trying to target this. There is one scheme particularly which is addressing the elimination of manual scavenging, which is bucket latrines. Unfortunately, this is an ancient tradition, and there are still 3 million manual scavengers which are working in India. It is banned, however, unfortunately, they still exist. So the idea of converting these toilets into low-cost, poor-flush latrines has been underway. And also, to address the point of school sanitation, the Ministry of Education has again floated a campaign for school sanitation using a very leading Bollywood actor to bring about more awareness to the issue and making it mandatory for schools to have toilets, and also trying to incentivize it by making the same toilets for the teachers as well as students, because unfortunately in India research showed that teachers would lock the toilets for children and so that they would get it clean. So this way, the idea of having it same and open, so the government is slowly realizing these issues, and they're trying to address what was the gaps that came about and now reinventing themselves. And so it's a work in progress.
Well, thank you. We have time for questions from those of you both around the table and in the back. Let me ask you when the microphone is passed to you, or if you're in the back, do we have a microphone to pass? Okay. So if you're in the back, just please come up and speak at a microphone, just so that we can capture this for those who are listening online. Let me just ask you to state your name and affiliation, please. So, questions. Yes, please. So.
Hi, Ed Bort, Mendez, England. I was wondering if the panel could speak to the global impact of the results of this study. And in particular, I'm thinking of the fact that upwards of 70% of the cost impacts were health-related. And I'm wondering to what extent the sort of output of this study will affect project development, and specifically monitoring and evaluation of health impacts of sanitation interventions through various funders, be they Gates, AID, et cetera. Is this going to be another argument sort of to do this? And I understand that there's sort of a high cost of taking before and after surveys of interventions. So
that's an excellent question. Thank you. Let me take it slightly from a different perspective. When we started this study, as I mentioned, we saw a lot of middle-income countries that had the money to be able to do this study, to be able to reach sanitation targets. But instead, they were selecting to build airports or shopping centers. And one of the hypotheses that we had were that, in fact, the Ministry of Health were not getting to talk to the people who are making the financing decisions for the country. So this tool was really to try and have the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Water, and these line ministries get the attention of the Ministry of Finance that makes the financing decisions. And we really saw this impact when the global financial crisis hit in 2008. Because in every country, we started to see the energy minister or the financial institution's treasury secretary or the industries minister all lobbying ministries of health and saying, if funding for the government goes down, you have to save energy. You have to save the roads. You have to save the banks. But we never saw the Ministry of Water ever at that table. And that goes to this phenomenon that Catherine talked about. It's because water is managed at the state and local levels, and these people never got that national attention. Now, having said that, we actually have a range of outcomes in the different countries. The Cambodia example that I mentioned to you, more than 50% of the economic impacts of sanitation in Cambodia were non-health-related causes. And those causes were costs to tourism. Nobody wants to go to Angkor Wat if they can't be assured of safe sanitation or pleasant circumstances. Cost to fisheries and aquaculture. Cost to industry and cost to environmental cleanup. So I think we look at and interpret each of these results in the countries and what kind of an impact it makes in those countries. Having said that, as Ed knows and as some of you may know, we believe passionately in being able to monitor the results and the outcomes of different types of interventions. So we have been trying to study the impacts of improved sanitation on health impacts at a large scale. So, thank you.
Hi, my name is Swathi Viravali with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and my question is about the sort of follow-up in sort of the way forward. If you were going to anticipate any type of interventions, where do you see the sort of the percentage distribution between resources like infrastructure as opposed to behavior modification? I think Mr. Costain, you sort of referred to this. I'm going back to the statistics you gave us about open defecation and behavior modification. I mean, do you think that's more of like a heavy infrastructure situation, or is it a behavior modification? And also, did your study look at all at hand washing and the impacts of hand washing upon these upon the health related impacts? Thank you.
Well, clearly, behavior change is a very critical component in this, but there is a substantial amount of investments that is needed, both in terms of the toilet infrastructure as well as in cities, in terms of on-site sanitation facilities and the collection and treatment facilities, basically. So, in fact, if you see the statistics on the sanitation market, roughly two-thirds of the investments are really in the infrastructure that is needed on in improving the access as well as the collection treatment systems. And one-third is really on O&M services that are needed for those. But in terms of the behavior change, really it's in terms of the design of the programs. So the rural campaign, which is there, is really looking at galvanizing community understanding of the health impacts associated with poor sanitation and galvanizing them to adopt changed sanitation practices. In the urban context, again, as we described, it's also in terms of the outcome focus that we're trying to bring. In the ratings, for example, just to give you one illustration of that, one of the indicators was the absence of open defecation in the city. Now, from a city manager's point of view, in some cities, they said, but I've got all my public toilets there. I've got all my facilities there. I can't help it if they don't use it. So it was a change in focus that had to be brought about in them that you need to actually push the agenda on stopping open defecation and not just end your job at building a toilet. Do you ensure that it's maintained properly for the public to use? Is it adequate for the population it's catering to? So it's basically in terms of the design elements that the behavior change has got to be addressed. And that's why we were talking about the the efficient planning part of it. And in terms of outcome orientation in the service providers, that is equally important. And this kind of a study, while, as Juan said, resources are being allocated, but if you go right down to the bottom, it's also in terms of making them understand the importance of the implications of this and not just see it as an infrastructure or an expenditure activity. I don't know if you want to add something.
Maybe I'll add a little bit to it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very good question. And I think in terms of looking at the specifics in India, it is largely in India a rural problem. It's that the challenge is biggest in the rural areas. And I think what we said about 650 million people, more or less, practicing open defecation in India, and the bulk of them, about 90% of that number, would be in the rural population. And it doesn't cost that much to make a rural latrine. It costs, I mean, I've seen very adequate latrines which cost about $40 to make. Though we are now, our total cost of a latrine, including what we call the software, which is a lot of the behavioral change support, is about $300 on average per latrine that we're having built. And again, it's not a matter of the resources. Now, India also has a very big cash for work scheme, which is called NREGA, the National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme. And that is about $20 billion a year, which is going into public works. And the bulk of that, of those works, are in the area of water and sanitation as well. So it's not, it is something that is certainly within reach, and it's certainly not something that is largely, at least in the rural areas, about resources. In the urban areas, I think that McKinsey did a study recently on urban renewal in India, and I'm not sure, I think if I recall correctly, the figure that they put down for improved sanitation in urban areas is about $30 billion. So that's the kind of ballpark figure that we'd be talking about to arrive at improved sanitation in India cities.
The good news about this is that behavior change doesn't take a lot of money. But the way that the sector thinks about behavior change could be examined. I think for a long time, those of us who were working in the sector thought that it would be obvious that having clean sanitation would lead to good health, and therefore, why would anybody that has the possibility of a toilet not use it? What the Water and Sanitation Program is finding out now through a lot of the work that we're doing around the world is that you may need to market the demand for sanitation just like you market the demand for anything else. And we're starting to find much more evidence about this. So in some of the villages in India which have achieved open defecation-free status, we're actually finding that it is a preferred village for women to marry into. So villages will use that as a criteria because they know that women bear the most heavy burden of inadequate sanitation, so they don't want to send their daughters to go to villages which do not have open defecation-free status. A global project that the Water and Sanitation Program is doing in our 24 countries is entitled Sanitation Marketing. How do we sell Diet Coke? And how do we sell sanitation? Good for you may not be the most attractive slogan.
Hi, my name is Gretchen McKeska from RTI International. I was kind of following up on this economic line. I was interested in the number. I think you gave $152 billion in the sanitation market that you saw as sort of a positive from this, that, okay, even though there's a lot to be done, there's also a lot of money that could be made in doing this. So I just wanted to get a little more background on how you came up with that number and what components that might consist of.
In this aspect, what we had looked at was, like Vandana mentioned, the market between 2007 to 2020. And this primarily has two components. One would be the component for infrastructure that is required to improve sanitation. That would mean for rural areas, the access bit, as well as in urban areas, including the safe disposal arrangements. So treatment plants, sewerage systems, on-site systems, etc. And I think one third of the cost was the operation and maintenance aspect. So the business that is in that can be developed in the operation and maintenance. That would include maintaining treatment plants, maintaining even community toilets in India. There are successful cases in India, for example, in Mumbai, Ahmedabad, Pune, where there are slum dwellers who are maintaining community toilets and making money and putting it back into the community. So that was the rough estimate and breakup that we had using the studies that the government of India had done. What are the estimates of the requirement for the raw sewage that is generated, as well as the number of people defecating in the open, and to provide each of them with access to toilets. There are more details available in the executive summary. So if you, it's already there on the WSP website, so you can actually go through the whole methodology there.
I have another question that I wanted to ask. We've talked, you know, a bit about maintenance and entrepreneurship, and in terms of maintenance, the, you know, potential for extending traditional systems, and also a little bit about just the extension of latrines in different areas. But I wanted to ask about innovation in the sanitation sector, and, you know, what kinds of kind of new methods for, you know, addressing sanitation at, you know, kind of the mid-level city scale. So, you know, some of the rural challenges, but also some of the innovations that you're seeing that may also feed into this market and issue.
This question gets me a little excited, actually. we are in India. We are working in both the rural and the urban sanitation sector, and one of the things that we have helped the government develop is the incentive scheme. With one in the rural side, it's called the Nirmal Gram Puraskar, where you're actually awarding villages for achieving open defecation free status. So while this started in 2006, was the first award. When 32 villages were awarded open defecation-free status. News of this spread like wildfire, and actually the example that Jay gave was a very powerful example that actually got people talking about sanitation in rural India, where women were not going to get married to another village where there's no toilet. So the next year on, and I must add, this award was given by the highest office in India. The president gave an award to a local villager, the panchayat president, the award. This is something that was not done in India and never before. So this grew from 32 to 500 to 5,000 to now 12,000. We're starting from a room of this size. Now we are doing it in three stadiums in India, where there, it's like a celebration on sanitation. So, and on the urban side, Juan mentioned, and even Vandana did, about the rating of cities, where, again, it was a similar thing where we said, let's incentivize improving sanitation, because in India, incentives work really well. So let's award cities for achieving sanitation. But we twisted the methodology a little bit, where we said it won't be a one-time award. Every time you move up the color from a red, black, blue, green, the award will be given by the government again and again. So you have to show improved performance and sustain it. So the first one is to have the rating has been done. The award is yet to be given. But this time it will not be a clean green city award. It will be an honorable mention to a few of the cities which have done well in some categories to encourage them next time onwards to improve your performance even more. Besides that, there have been many other small-scale innovations as well. Cities like I mentioned in Mumbai, Trichy, where slums have used sanitation as an entry point to bring in a whole host of other reforms. So from sanitation, from being provided a community toilet, they've gone on to education, the girl child education, lighting, solid waste management. And this has really empowered communities, and it's shown significant results, which has now led the government and state governments to scale up these initiatives and try to make sure that it's able to be replicated in other cities as well.
As you can see, Catherine, WSP staff love talking about innovation and sanitation. When looking at this innovation question, we really started to look much more in depth at what are the incentives to the average household of having access to sanitation, and what does it take for them to actually make the purchase decision?
And there are really many, many different types of reasons that households purchase sanitation. And a project that WSP is doing in Latin America shows where we've actually offered a $30 toilet and a $2,000 fully tiled bathroom. And in peri-urban communities where, you know, the average income is not very high, we found a number of the community households selecting the $2,000 fully tiled bathroom. And the reasons are, I want my house to be the best house in this community. And so even if I have to borrow money, I will purchase the fully tiled bathroom. My relatives work in the U.S., and they only come back to this country once every 5 years. And I want to make sure that I treat them with the same type of, you know, the respect and honor in the provide the same types of conditions that they have living in an industrialized country. There was one in blue, and I decided to paint my whole house blue. So there are really just a lot of range of different incentives that even, you know, the traditional sanitation programs where everybody gets the same toilet and says, why aren't you all jumping in to buy it, is really shifting quite a lot in this sector. And I think that's where partnership with the private sector at all levels has proven to be a really one of an innovative approach in this market.
Thank you. We have a microphone for those in the back now if there's another question or up here in the front. Yes, please.
Peter Sawyer from the Pulitzer Center. You mentioned that the WSP or the World Bank is going to do a $1 billion project in India. We also talked about that there's adequate resources within the country already. So kind of just, you can talk about like what the role of outside donors or WSP is in addressing the problem, and within India, who's taking the lead? Is it outside organizations or the governments themselves that's really out in front on the issue? Thank you.
Maybe I could speak to that. That the World Bank has a number of programs in the water and sanitation space at the current time, in fact. Not only do we have this $1 billion program for urban water and sanitation, we also have another program, which is $1 billion, which is to clean up the Ganga River. And in fact, cleaning up the Ganga River is, in fact, in many ways, a closet urban sanitation project, because it's the Ganga River didn't come out of the Himalayas the way it is. And we also have another program as well, which we're just developing to work with the city of Delhi as well to improve the water situation in Delhi, as well as new rural water projects in Kerala, in Andhra Pradesh, and we have one which we're just developing now in Rajasthan. So there are a number of, and that's in addition to the existing projects that we have. So there's a lot of development assistance coming from the World Bank in this field and from other development partners. But I guess the crux of the question you're asking is, well, does it matter? What is the point of this money if we're saying it's largely behavioral? And I think that, yes, that's certainly true. Obviously, it's particularly in the urban areas that infrastructure does have to be built, and in fact, that's where the bulk of the World Bank money is going to go. And I think I used this figure of about $30 billion that was cited by McKinsey in terms of what was needed to improve. And obviously, there's a lot that also needs to be done in operations and maintenance. So those big spending projects are largely targeted towards the urban area where there is a lot of digging, a lot of building to be done. The rural projects tend to be smaller; they tend to be about the $100-$120 million projects size per state. And you know, an Indian state obviously ranges up to about 100 million people in a single state. So these are obviously, you know, that money doesn't go quite so far. But also, as we talked about, that the behavioral change is, in most cases in rural sanitation, more expensive than the infrastructure, than actually building a latrine. As I said, that I've seen latrines in the Northeast, which are costing about $40. So in other places, depending on the terrain and the materials that are available, they can be a little bit more expensive. But it is actually more expensive to educate people. So the education part of it is probably where the money is largely going.
If I can just quickly add, the behavior change is largely, of course, that of the common public, but there's a huge behavior change in the government agencies which are delivering these services. So especially in the urban areas where a lot of investments are being made and are being proposed, it's also in terms of how those investments are directed and whether they really will deliver the outcomes. So as you've heard in the Ganga project, there have been precedent of another Ganga project in the past where vast investments were made, but really did not result in improved treatment of sewage coming out of those cities. So there have been institutional failures in a lot of these cities between the service providers, the decisions on investments which need to be addressed. So there is actually a behavior change component sitting there as well, which is very integral to this entire picture.
I don't know if I heard you correctly, but one of the questions I thought you were asking was, what do external donors, what can they contribute to a country? And my colleagues have talked about the specific context of India, but in fact, the Water and Sanitation Program is often asked that question. And one principle that that we would suggest is that external donors first understand the context in which the government is addressing this sector. Last month, I was at a sector conference in Washington on water and sanitation, and a person who runs an NGO out of Colorado said, if a foreign NGO came to Denver and said, I'm going to give you water, and started to actually do behavior change lessons and, you know, contact the community, they would probably be thrown in jail. And so one of the things that I think that's very important principle is to really to understand the context that you're going into. And we've seen really excellent programs from NGOs and civil society organizations, but because of the lack of link between the existing government program, that when the well is dug and the NGO leaves, then there's no maintenance, no supervision, because it is not linked to an existing infrastructure or way of doing business. So I think that would be just one principle that we would suggest for external donors.
Okay, I just wanted to follow up. So you're saying the... So just like you said, that one of the big points that you wanted to make was that the problem wasn't financial in India; it was just like behavior or willingness to address the issue. So I'm just trying to understand what the WSP's role is in, like, if the issue is not financial, then why is money going there?
No, so I mean, I think it's a very good point. I think it's worth spending some time on this as well. That it really is about changing people's behaviors, about educating people, about making people aware of the importance of sanitation at all levels. No, so as I think Jay has also alluded to, we need to make government officials know that good sanitation is an important issue. And many people, particularly in rural areas, don't understand what the risk factors are. And I think also Jay has mentioned as well, even when we're carrying out surveys about the use of toilets, health is not coming out as being a priority in terms of why would somebody use a toilet. It's coming out as much more issues about privacy and social pressure and so forth. People are not always aware of what are the health implications of poor sanitation, particularly, for example, with handling children. People are just not aware that children's feces are laden with pathogens. I mean, there's this idea that no, kids are clean or whatever. People are just not aware, and in fact, it's alluded to, I think, in the flyer here, what are the vehicles through which pathogens are traveling from feces into the food chain, and people are being imbibing them. There's a lot of ignorance on this topic, and so a lot of these resources are really going about, as Jay has mentioned, I mean, educating people, making people aware, but possibly most important is trying to ensure that the government systems are in place. So to make this sustainable, we've talked about, it wouldn't be difficult to go to basically every village in India and build latrines, but it would be difficult in the first instance to make people use those latrines. So use is much more important than access. And in fact, this is a debate we're always having with the government about people have access to latrines, but they're not using them. In fact, we could show you all types of pictures of latrines which cost hundreds of dollars to build, being used for storage, being used as a shower, being used as whatever. People just aren't using latrines as latrines. So that education is important, but also trying to make sure that the government systems are in place to make sure that the local government owns that process. And no, good sanitation is a private cost and a public good, and so it has to be a community-led activity. So we've got to make sure that the community, the head of the community, which would be the what they call the sarpanch or the pradhan, which is the village headman, head person, will own that situation. And we also find a very important role for women's groups as well. So we find that communities that either have a female head of the village or that have a strong women's group have much better outcomes. So say it really is the focus. We've talked a lot about money and about figures, and we've talked a lot about infrastructure costs, but the real focus is on the software, if you like, the know-how, the understandings at the village level, but just as important at every level of the government. It has to be something that's understood from the union government, from the ministries, all the way down through the state governments, trying to ensure that every state government, who are quite independent in their policies and processes, to make sure that every state government has that sense of understanding. In fact, we've now had the first clean state declared, which was Sikkim in the northeast. So that whole state has been declared open defecation free. We're hoping to see Kerala in the southwest be declared open defecation free soon. We're hoping that Himachal Pradesh in the north will also be declared open defecation free. So this is the type of process that we have to go through to try to make sure that it's understood, but to try to ensure that the institutions are in place to maintain sustained good sanitation practices.
Yes, please, John.
John Sauer, Water for People. I think Jay was actually quoting my boss before. I have a couple of questions. One, can you drill down a little bit on the sustainability issue? I mean, I'm very keen to sort of hear why are things sustainable now? What has changed? What's really and how do we know that these things are really going to be sustainable? So that's one aspect. Another thing is this whole question again of the potential market for sanitation. Where are we really doing things differently around creating sanitation as a business? And do you have some really concrete examples around that? And what's being done to sort of really kick that off and make that grow? Because I think that as this data shows, there's huge potential there.
Just to quickly take a shot at the sustainability issue, a large part, of course, is in terms of generating demand for sanitation and understanding from the public side about the importance of sanitation, so that when infrastructure is created, it does not lie idle or get diverted to other purposes, which has, I think, been amply illustrated with the anecdotes that I think Juan and Jay have shared. But in the urban side, there is also the large issue of financial sustainability, because what has happened is, while as large funds are assigned, say, from the central government now in the last decade especially, often the allocations do not reach the service provider agency, which is at the local level. Especially the O&M budgets are not adequate to cater to the capital that is being created through the investments which are being made. So you have large sewerage projects being created in fairly small local bodies which do not have O&M budgets to service those assets, or large treatment plants being set up where they do not have funds to really run those plants, or the power supply is erratic. So the choice of technology might not be sustainable for those towns. So in a sense, the city sanitation plan that is being undertaken by the central government is really targeting that gap. It is trying to make cities understand that you do not take up an investment in isolation, a big capex investment, just because some big program is being run by the state government. You pick up those funds and put it in a big asset, but understand the O&M implications of that and provide for that, so that those assets are run and deliver the necessary results that they are targeted at. I don't know, Vivek, do you want to give some examples? Yeah, sure.
So regarding that, are we really looking at different approaches for, providing you're talking about toilets, and the first thing you're talking about is like, we're going to do a poor flush toilet. I mean, and can we really sustain that? Is that cost effective? Is that sustainable? Is that kind of infrastructure really going to work? And are we looking, getting to innovation? For me, that's what I wanted to hear from that question about innovation was, what are we doing that's innovative around, you know, our approaches and our technologies, not necessarily around an advocacy strategy, which is cool, but, you know, it's not exactly. So if you can talk a little bit about that, that'd be great.
On that, in the urban side, there is a lot of stuff on the on-site sanitation options that we can talk about.
Let me talk about just building on what Vandana had said. India had, well, especially in the urban side, there was this whole legacy of what we used to call scheme thinking. When there is money at the end of the pot, which a central government announces a scheme, all the cities and the states would scramble to put together a plan to get access to that money. And how would they like to spend that money? With big technology, big treatment plants, big sewerage schemes. So what this approach, the city sanitation planning approach that the government of India has adopted, is trying to reverse that thinking, where they are saying that, you know, sanitation, unfortunately, you cannot ring fence any one aspect. You cannot ring fence the poor. You cannot just address one aspect of sanitation while ignoring the rest. So this whole national urban sanitation policy, and even in the rural side, mirrors this, where they say that you have to look at the entire cycle. You have to look at access, you have to look at conveyance, you have to look at treatment and disposal. Only then will you be able to achieve something called total sanitation. Realizing this, the government of India is now, one is a city sanitation planning thing, where they are trying to push cities to think as a sanitation master plan and then look at how much money, how much investments are required to meet the needs of a city. On the other hand, now they're looking at not just pushing large sewerage schemes. They're looking at on-site septage management, because lots of cities in India, cannot dig up the entire city to lay down a sewer pipe. So they are already dependent on septic tanks or pit latrines. So how do we get that into the system? How do we do rules and regulatory frameworks? How do we develop that? That will make sure that septic tanks are constructed safely as well as treated and disposed of safely. So the government of India has now requested us to help them in drafting a septage management guideline, which will help cities in trying to do something like this for the first time, because there's never been any articulation of this before. So this kind of thinking has begun. And the government of India is very aware of this. And similarly on the rural side as well, while seeing why schemes in the past of just toilet construction did not work, the community-led total sanitation approach was innovated, where you have to move the entire village together to meet collective social outcomes. Sanitation is not just an individual household matter, it is the community aspect. And that is what needs to be addressed. Anything else?
Yeah, just one quick additional point, since you were referring to technologies. Because there was a bit of a top-down kind of approach, which was very investment and expenditure-oriented, there were also standard guidelines and templates which were observed for technology choices. So it was a very templatized approach where you just said, oh, this is what's in the manual, and therefore I implement it whether it's appropriate or not. But now, since the focus is being put on outcomes, and to quite an extent, there's also an information exercise which is being pushed out on technology options which could be considered, and then leaving the technology choice to the level at which they can take the call more appropriately, which is the local decision maker, that given their water resources, given their context, what is the appropriate technology choice to deliver the outcome. That is the shift that is being attempted in some of these programs that is being brought out. So you provide the information, focus on outcomes, allow them the room to make the choice, and then hope for the outcomes to come through improved monitoring and incentive schemes that are there.
Also, this gives us an opportunity to plug one of our upcoming studies. So we have another study coming up, which is going to be called the Option Study, which is going to be looking at exactly some of the questions that you asked. I mean, what are the most cost-effective approaches? In fact, we've already done this in East Asia, and we found some interesting things that sometimes the cheapest options turn out not to be the most cost-effective. So in certain cases, at least, and this is still a work that's ongoing, for example, dry pit latrines, which are very cheap to make, have turned out to be more expensive in the long run than concrete latrines and pore flush latrines. So this is something that we're going to be doing in India soon. I think it's also important, I think you're quite right to emphasize this issue about sustainability, and we spend more time worrying about sustainability than we do about anything else. And where we are right now, where we still have 60% of the population in India practicing sanitation practices which are less than totally sanitary. I think we have to talk about sustainability as something that we aspire to. That it's not, it's very difficult to say that in this at this level, even though we have one or two states which kind of claim the near-mall state status, it's difficult to say that we have a sustainable situation in place. And one of the things we're working at very closely with the government is how we monitor where we're having slippage, where people are falling back into inadequate practices. And in fact, we're trying to work out what are the important issues. We are finding that the same approach, the same equipment, the same technology is having different outcomes in different states and different communities. And that really is reinforcing to us that it's a lot of it's about communities, that we've got to really understand what is relevant for that community and how we can establish practices which can be sustained. We do have cases of sustainability where we are going back to the communities and checking and trying to make sure that, yes, that the sanitation levels are being maintained. So there is a very good track record of sustainable outcomes, but it's not universal.
Yes, please.
I'm Matthew Ward. I'm from the Energy Program here at CSIS. And I was just wondering if you guys had had looked at waste energy programs with a lot of the big infrastructure programs that that are applicable to sanitation. There's also energy requirements and possible energy generation electrification in rural areas as well as urban areas. And if you guys had looked at that with the Ministry of Energy or any of that.
I mean, though that's not really linked in this particular study's context, on the solid waste management side, for example, there has been a lot of interest in India on looking at energy generation from waste. There have been several projects attempted. The success rate hasn't been particularly great. We, in fact, did a very detailed study on, treatment of waste for energy use, biomethanation, RDF, etc. Again, a lot of institutional factors caused problems in ensuring that the project succeeded. But there is a huge interest in making this happen. So Delhi itself, in fact, is struggling with space for landfills and is trying to develop a plant, large plant, which is RDF-based. On the sanitation side, I think it's still a very early stage that we are at, because in terms of options, say, for using sludge for, generating energy, that is right now still very, very nascent. And the first stage is really to ensure proper collection and, systems which can actually collect and put it to a place and then projectize it. But on the other side, the area which is really being looked at very closely is wastewater reuse, which is really not energy generating, but it is going to save energy a lot on pumping systems, etc. That is something that the government is very, very closely pushing. And in not just the sanitation programs that they're doing, but in terms of the other overall urban programs that they have undertaken for investments, there's a strong component of incentivizing wastewater reuse as part of that. So in fact, one of their programs, which we worked very closely on benchmarking, has wastewater reuse as a performance criteria and has set that at least 15% or maybe up to 15% should be targeted at for reuse through various means, whether to supply to industrial consumers or put it back into the system. So that's one area which is being pushed much more aggressively.
I just add something a little bit tangential to that as well, that when we look at sanitation and clean water in India, almost everybody in rural India at the moment is boiling their water. So the energy expenditure, when you think of population of India, 1.3 billion, about 900 million people living in rural India, and so almost everybody in rural India and some people in urban India as well are boiling their water. You've got like a billion people boiling water several times a day. So the energy consumption just on sort of domestic water treatment is just phenomenal. And that's not something we've calculated, but I think that's where we'd get the single biggest energy impact.
Well, we know that you've calculated 53 billion or 53.6 billion Okay. You've calculated billions of losses related to sanitation, and yet, you know, we know that India's economy has been growing significantly in recent years. India is one of the BRIC countries, you know, really kind of seen as one of the emerging, if not already emerged, but real economic powerhouses. And, you know, in recent years, India has, I think, you know, kind of transformed its government entity, which, you know, was coordinating and receiving assistance, into a body that can also, you know, offer assistance to neighbors and other countries. And, you know, I just wanted to ask you to say a little bit about what you see, you know, for the potential of India to share some of its lessons from, you know, these city, the city sanitation plans, and, you know, from some of its experiences with advocacy and other issues with some of its, either its regional neighbors or further abroad.
Okay. I think that Vivek is going to be very keen to say something about spreading the gospel to other countries. But I'd just actually like to speak to also how you started out that comment, in as much as that, yes, India has done a great deal in terms of its economic growth, but one of the concerns that we have is that this is not being realized in terms of its sanitation outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the, you know, whatever it is, the $1.2 billion people in the world who practice open defecation, more than half of them are in India. And one of the things that really, and that's also amongst the, no, obviously the worst, some of the worst statistics anywhere in the world, but one of the things that really struck me is that if you even look at issues like such as infant malnutrition, which is very closely related to sanitation, you know, 47% of children in India at the current time under fives are malnourished. That's twice as high as sub-Saharan Africa. And so I think that this is, you know, one of the important points we'd like to bring out with this whole discussion around sanitation, is that there are wonderful development stories to hear in India, but there's a very serious social human development story that maybe is not being told strongly enough. And that's really one of the reasons why we wanted to bring out this study on the economics of sanitation, to remind people that even though we do have this rising India, we also have an India that's lagging quite badly behind. But Vivek is now going to tell you something about what is being done or picked up in other countries, I think.
Do you want me to talk about the rating?
And, yeah,
okay, sure. The urban rating story has developed quite a bit of interest, not just within India, where people are also now waking up to the sanitation disaster, as well as other countries who want to learn from this experience of how this was done at such a large scale, covering 72% of the urban population, and trying to apply it to their own context. So there was interest in Indonesia, where they are very keen on doing a similar rating for their urban cities, where they will obviously suit the indicators to their context, but do something similar where they will be, again, mobilizing their political as well as their citizens to wake up to urban sanitation issues. And similar interest has also been shown in Africa, where they're still trying to debate whether it should be inter-country or within, maybe they'd pilot it in one country and then develop it forward. So this is supposed to be a topic of discussion in Africa San, which is to be held later this year. So there is good potential, and let's hope that India is also able to sustain this moment and maybe scale it up to other remaining cities in the country, as well as hopefully others in South Asia and Southeast Asia as well. Started in Bangladesh. There's the CLTS, which is the community-led total sanitation approach, which I mentioned earlier, where, of course, the lesson was in... it started in Bangladesh, where India learned the lessons and then scaled it up throughout the country. And from then, it just spiraled to many other countries as well, crediting both Bangladesh equally and India for able to maybe
scale it up
within the country. Countries around the world, Indonesia, Africa, they're all adopting the CLTS approach
as well. In fact, it's one of our large global programs within WSP as well.
Well, we've come to the end of our time this afternoon, and I want to thank all of you for spending part of your afternoon here discussing the economic impacts of inadequate sanitation in India with us. I think we've been very fortunate to hear from extremely well-informed and passionate team from the water and sanitation program based both here in Washington and in India. We've had a wonderful overview of the study, a situation within the broader context of the Economics of Sanitation Initiative. We've heard quite a bit about the significant challenge of sanitation and some of the advocacy that this study has already generated and some of the future work that that the initiative will carry out. And also we've heard about some promising solutions, both on the technical side, but particularly on the governance and regulatory side. So please join me in thanking our panelists this afternoon, Jay So, Vandana Bhatnagar, Vivek Raman, and Juan Costain. And thank you for joining us.